Part of the vision was to open up our own spiritual start that we have as a team at Upbuild to our community so that we can all be nourished spiritually and oriented towards the life of the soul rather than identifying by default with the mind and the body, thinking that that is us, living as if that is us. We want to create space where we could all come together to gain from spiritual connection with the true self, the soul. And it is the anniversary, 3 years of that program, remembering who we are, and we've been really excited to have Satchinandana Swami with us at that time to share with us his wisdom on living the life of the soul. So he has so many experiences. He's been a monk for more than 50 years and a very deep spiritual practitioner. He's gone through a lot. We had him for On the Brink of Death for 2 years, experiences of life-threatening time and what it was like to go through that and to gain spiritual perspective and inspiration even through that, which is incredible. And now we're focusing on the more mystical side and what it is that he's gained through the depth of his practice and developing a spiritual vision, tapping into the ultimate reality, the higher reality that the soul is an integral part of. So he travels around the world hearing his teachings. He does musical meditation called kirtan, which is very popular in yoga studios, and it's an amazing thing to be a part of his kirtan, which those of you who join us in person in New York, at the end of this series, we will have an opportunity to be in kirtan with him in person. We would love to have you for that. And he's written a number of books, as well as other essays and poems that are invaluable. So we're very, very blessed to have you with us, Satchinandana Swami. We're also very grateful and excited to have this community, this global community, people from different parts of the world gathered here. The format is that Satchinandana Swami will share with us a story of a spiritual experience, and he'll leave a little time at the end for some questions, and then at the hour mark, it's 1 p.m. Eastern time, we will let anyone go who needs to go, and those who would like to stay on, we get to have Satchinandana Swami for an extra half an hour to be with him and ask any further questions. Please send your questions via direct message in the chat to Michael throughout. Please send them to Michael, and he will field the questions, and then I'll call on you to ask as time permits. We ask a very specific culture to gain the most from the experience, and that culture is made of three pillars. We ask for your full-hearted participation. That means please kindly remove all distractions, give your undivided attention with your hearts, and if you can keep your video on, that also really goes a long way. There may be a few exceptions, that's all right. But as far as possible, keeping your video on allows us to be more present and more present with each other as a community. Your respect, respecting the teachings and each other, that co-creates a safe and sacred space. And lastly, your determination to not just hear something, but to take it with you, to carry it with you, to live the lessons that we received from Satchinandana Swami today. So we ask for your full-hearted participation, your respect, and your determination. And now I'm going to turn it over to Satchinandana Swami to bring us into the experience. Thank you all so much. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming. Let me just start with an invocation to request auspiciousness to guide us through this session. Auspiciousness in the sense that there's really some spiritual benefit for each single member here. Om Agana Timirandasya Kyananjala Salakaya Shakshurun Militam Yenai Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. The process of spiritual enlightenment is usually a gradual one, comparable only to awakening. As you awaken, you first become aware that this is only a dream which kept me busy and which captured me. You become aware that it is a dream. Then the next stage is you say goodbye to the dream. You say, I'm happy to let you go. And as you then turn away from the world of darkness, if you so want, or the world of sleep, you become increasingly more aware of your surroundings, and then you enter the world. This is the normal state of spiritual enlightenment, a gradual state comparable to awakening. However, there are also those experiences which come almost like lightning that falls from the sky, and for a moment opens our perspective. We see everything at once, the trees, the forest, the mountains, everything at once becomes suddenly visible. And when the lightning has passed, when it's over, at that time it has greatly impacted our vision. So these sudden spiritual experiences which come with a great impact into our life at once open our vision. And if it is a genuine spiritual experience, we will not be able to forget it. In fact, it will form a fundament or a platform from which we move forward henceforth. I would love to share with you today such a sudden spiritual experience, something that made me a different person, perhaps the person I am now. I mean, it gave me the faith, the understanding, the conviction which I have now. And I have chosen today an experience where there seems to be no other explanation. In other words, it's not just my subjective experience, but something happened objectively, something for every one to take note of. And I do hope that this experience which I share will also help you. I also wish to do something at the end of this session which you would call in the English that is used in New York a calibration, so a fine-tuning which you can do in your own life so that your perception after the fine-tuning is better able to grasp or receive spiritual experience for yourself. And I do hope with this calibration I will be able to leave you with something permanently. I don't, as a monk who gives seminars and retreats and wishes to help others to move forward, I wouldn't be satisfied that in the session you just marvel at my own experience. Oh, lucky Satchinandan Swami. Or as you would say in New York, wow! I would really love to leave you with tools so that you can make similar experiences. Good. Having said this, I would love to dive right into it. I'm not sure, maybe this is on my side here, if every one of you has unmuted themselves. I hear some room noises of other rooms than ours. So if you have not yet unmuted, no, is it called muted? Muted yourself. Please check that little image in the left side of your computer. Let's see. Good. There was a time in my life when every year I would go to the banks of the Ganga. In fact, a good friend of mine had just received a beautiful slot of land as a gift, which had a few very ancient trees on it, and which bordered at the banks of Mother Ganga. There were even some white shores, or white strands, as we say here, where there was this very white and glittering sand. But most of the bank of the Ganga was full of rocks, some very big, like small hills, others as high as 1.5 persons, and then many stones on the side. And I would go every morning alone down a forest, a deep, deep forest path. I needed to walk very carefully for about 10 to 15 minutes. And then I would exit the forest, go over these smaller rocks, and sit next to a large rock, which was 1.5 my size. Every day I would do it. Once when I came to my spot, I saw a wild cat drinking. It looked like a mixture of a tiger and leopard. And I quickly waited out of respect to let the wild cat peacefully drink its fill and then go in the forest. I had heard before from my friend who lived there that don't be afraid of these. They are tigers, but not like the Bengali tigers, who are up to 5 meters long. They are Himalaya tigers. They are respecting spiritual people. They can feel your atmosphere, and then they don't do anything to you. Anyways, when you see such a wild cat, a tiger, you do become alarmed. And the tiger disappeared in the jungle again. But when I came back after my meditation on the shore of the Ganga, after 2 hours, the small ashram in which my friend lived was in great terror, because one of the cows had been attacked by the tiger. It could have well been my tiger, and it was still very disturbed and bleeding, and we needed to get a villager from a village high up in the mountains to care for its wounds and have the right balm or cream and pacify the poor cow. Telling you all these details, I want to impress to you the place where I lived was in the midst of the jungle. Seeing tigers was not unusual for us, and we all needed to face our own fear. It is known when you meet a wild beast, possibly dangerous to your life in the jungle, you have to be fearless. They can smell you in the atmosphere. When there is a fear in your heart, your perspiration will tell the tiger this person has fear. You need to know this, and as a monk I had to learn to control my own fear, which is something which is inside the mind, and so that I was accepted by the environment of the jungle and could do my meditation there in an undisturbed way. So this is the prelude. Now the experience comes. On another day, I went again to my preferred place in the jungle. There were no longer any sightings of tigers. Most probably they had gone somewhere else. The villagers told us that tell your white Swami, they told this to my friend, it is very safe. He doesn't need to be afraid to meet a tiger. After all, you don't want to take risks. So I had gone the day before to this beautiful place in the jungle, it's at the edge of the jungle, right at the banks of the Ganga, and had done my japa meditation. My dear everyone, I can only recommend this place for you to go one day. You sit right on the beach. You have to bring something to sit on because the stones are a little uncomfortable, and then the Ganga flows by like a stream of spiritual energy. It is so absolutely peaceful in the back is jungle, then there is in front the endless stream of Mother Ganga, and on the other side of the Ganga is also jungle. This environment is very, very good for meditation, because it seems that this noise, or this, it's not really a noise, the sound of the flowing Ganga is not only outside of you but inside of you, and somehow takes away all distractions. So I was sitting there for some time, chanting sacred mantras, and then I interrupted my chanting. I took a sacred text, the Bhagavatam, and I heard, I read about a meditation there. You close your eyes, and then you bring the image of the moon, the sun, and the fire in your heart area, and there, after having done so, you focus and chant the sacred syllable Om. You should chant it, the text said, I still remember it, the sound should be like the bell, like the ringing of a bell. There, the sound is at first very pronounced, and then it becomes more pervasive and it goes everywhere. I believe you will be able to hear it again. It's still sounding, at least here in this room, still sounding. So in this way you chant the Om. And I was very delighted to read this instruction text and started to do my Oms. All of a sudden, my attention was interrupted by the loud cracking of twigs. Not one twig, not two twigs, not three or four, 50, maybe 150 branches were breaking, and the sound came closer. It descended from the slope of the mountain and came close, and I had no idea what was coming. No idea. It could be anything. In this enchanted land where it said the devas visit, the beings from the higher planets, anything and everything is possible. And of course my mind, because the sound was so loud and so, it was not gracious, it was not very, let me say, melodious, it was just check, check, check. And then I could not focus on Om. I looked back and I saw the forest, which was like a wall. Remember, I'm in the thick jungle. Everywhere branches were moving, twigs were moving. But I did not see what was coming at me. Everything was hidden behind a green wall still. All of a sudden I saw a black face with sharp fangs, then another black face, then this disturbed grundling, and then they emerged, a whole troop of white-haired langur monkeys. Do you know what is a langur in the English language? I see Vipin, can you give me a sign? Do you know what that is? Not sure. Yes?
I've seen them before in India.
They are these big white-haired monkeys. They have a black face. And when they open their mouth, ooh, you see an impressive array of very sharp teeth. So a whole troop of them was coming down, and from their disgruntled and angry looks, when by now they were on the beach, they wanted to drink the Ganga water, I could understand that I was sitting in a territory which they claimed to be their own. It was their place. I was an intruder. And they were 150 or so. I mean, you don't count very accurately in such moments. And they were coming at me. They were surrounding me. They were baring their fangs. They were agitated because some of them were ladies who carried their very newborn young ones, and they were thinking of protection, obviously, and here was an intruder. And I guess I smelled like anxiety, I guess. I really did not know what to do. I took a stone, but then I thought, if I throw one stone at one of them, he will be very angry, he will not be chased away, and then I have everyone piling on top of me and punishing me with their sharp teeth. I just decided I remain sitting there, and I tried my most charming smile, which I could do at that moment. But they came closer. All of a sudden, there was a command. And they stopped. Then another communication. And I looked who was ordering these monkeys, and then I saw a real big monkey king sitting on that rock next to me, that which was 1.5 times my size. And he looked at me, and there was something about him which was more than a monkey. That is what I could recognize. But what exactly was about him was not clear to me. At least all I know, the monkeys left me. They all went, well, they split. One group went to my left, the other to my right, and they drank and they did their monkey business. They actually look very beautiful and very majestic. And the leader of them continued to look down on me as if he expected something from me. So I sat down. Well, I had not moved up, but I turned towards the Ganga, and I continued chanting the Om in the way that I had just learned from the ancient Bhagavatam text. No. Om. Like this. I continued, and I did become quite peaceful. Then the next moment, I mean, not the next moment, but after some time, I heard there was someone else making the sound Om. First I thought, well, perhaps I'm interpreting the sound of the flowing river. It came quite smoothly by. That was the sound of the Om, but it was not. Anyways, I thought, well, you are here in nature, you are together with these monkeys. At the moment it's not intelligent to get up and change your place, because you might disturb and agitate them. So I continued to Om, but there was always someone chanting along with me. So I became interested to look, and then I looked up the rock and I saw the monkey leader was chanting Om. His lips were pursed. He looked straight at the Ganga and he chanted Om. He looked very peaceful. He didn't make these quick monkey movements which differentiate the species from our species, he sat there like a time-worn yogi who did what yogis have done for thousands of years. Now, he recited the syllable Om. I was overwhelmed. What I just experienced was the, let us say, crossing over the natural borders which are there between the animal kingdom and us human beings. He was someone making a sound which only the vocal cords of humans can pronounce. And he was entering into a state almost as if he wanted to show me, this is how you do it. It was mesmerizing. It was a very, very awe-inspiring. So both of us continued chanting Om for, I mean, I didn't look at the wristwatch. I guess it was an hour or three quarters of an hour. It was a very pleasant experience to feel the interconnectedness of all us living beings through the divine sound of the sacred syllable Om. Then after some time, you could really see he shifted back into the Monkey King and he made his sounds. I do not know the language very precisely, but it sounded like that. Then his subordinates assembled and they all went up the mountain. I could again hear the crackling of the branches and twigs and the dry wood and everything. He went at the very end. He came down. He actually came down to me and he chanted one more time a very profound Om just next to me. And then he left. I mean, he was not just, he had to come down the rock. He was not like shoulder on shoulder, but close enough. And then he went to that path which we humans take. You know, the other monkeys went right into the jungle. You know, they don't need human paths, and they most probably think we human beings have no idea how to move through the jungle, so why should they move on our paths? But he took the path, and before, and this is what I remember till the end of my life, before he disappeared in the jungle, he stood up on his legs, he stretched out, he looked exactly like a yogi. He had turned around to me, and what monkeys don't do, he did. He waved his hand like this and then disappeared in the jungle. I've never met my friend again, but I know if we meet, I will take his hand and shake it. What I had seen there, I would love to have filmed and photographed, but Hari Prasad and Rasanath know that I'm one of these dinosauriers who don't have a mobile telephone. I don't use one. For the necessary communication, I have Gokrishna and others who know how to operate these distraction machines. But I'm not exaggerating, I'm not ornamenting the experience. I'm just telling, I saw the monkey chanting Om, it was better than me. And I saw him turning around to wave me a goodbye, just like a New Yorker would do when he says goodbye to another person. No? So I saw this with my own eyes, and it was really, really very, very nice. The Om, my dear everyone, is a quite unusual sound vibration. It is not a sound vibration from this word. It is said, if you look through the eyes of the tradition, this is you will hear that the relationship with Om and God is inherent. Just like the light is inherent to the flame, and the warmth of the light is inseparable from the flame, the holy vibration of Om cannot be separated at all from the essential nature of God. In other words, just like when you have a flame, there is light and there is, warmth. When you have God, there is Om. They belong together. It's a sound vibration, a perfect sound vibration. And therefore, in the Yoga Sutras, it is said, from repeating Om and contemplating its meaning comes the realizations of one inner consciousness and freedom from all disturbances, such as the diseases of the body and the instability of the mind. In the spiritual tradition, you find that yogis who do not want to be disturbed can shift their form, and when they do so, they can take on an animal form and so on. There are yogis in Nepal who stay in a cave as a tiger, and the villagers come by every evening to bring a bowl of milk or two bowls of milk, and then they find in the morning that the milk has been drunken. It's no longer there. The yogi has accepted the offering. And there are stories of how villagers have made an alliance with these yogi tigers, if you want to call them like this, so that they take care of them, and the tiger in as a, let us say, return of the favor, protects the village from other tigers and animals. The animal which I saw, the more than animal, the monkey, the enlightened monkey, was one of these species. He was an ancient being who, for his own, protection and his own privacy, had avoided the world of man. You find many, many yogis thinking that we human beings are not the crown of creation. In fact, we are the misfits of creations because of our disturbed mind and our falling out of harmony with nature. And what I saw there on that day was someone who had shifted into the form of the yogi, of the monkey. he was the leader of the troop, and he chanted Om to show me how to do it, and it was really very, very impressive. I think the remainder of our little time we can just use to make to chant a little Om, and then at the end of our program, we will ask you to put your questions forward. Let me just see here. I must tell you, what I have before me are the are the notes to my forthcoming book on meditation, and I want to guide you a little bit from the pages of this book. No, actually, it's more personal if I do that directly from my own experience. So, please, all of you, sit straight. We can just do a few deep breaths. This is time for yourself and for the more than human reality. Bring your attention, please, to your heart space. Whenever you breathe in, imagine you're breathing into your heart. And as you breathe out, relax a little bit more. You can simplify the process by thinking that you're breathing into your collarbone, your chest bone. On the next exhale, we will all chant the mantra Om. Try to chant it from deep. Let it come out of your heart and rise to the vocal cords and then go outside. Okay, please now let us all have a deep inhale. Space. We will chant three more Oms, but this time let us please do it like this, that we close our mouth, maybe at the middle of the exhale, and then let the sound resonate a little bit in us. Let the M of the Om, the last part, just resonate in our chest and in our head. So let's do it again. Sit a little bit in silence. And let us return to room awareness. Whenever I chant nowadays the Om, my mind goes back to that place when I sat close to the Ganga, when I first heard the sounds of the breaking branches, and then met my friend, the enlightened monkey, I call him, who commanded his troop to let me in peace, let me stay, let me be, and who chanted Om, and who, you know, when you're next to such a person, being who chants, and he's in an animal form, and it's such a beautiful chant, then this is in the insight of the mind. And really, he took the last doubt from me. I had no doubts, but when he then got up and stood there like a human being in a posture that is not typical for these langurs, I mean, they can move a little up but not stand straight, and he gave me that New York wave, High Avenue wave, then I became very shunned, and I this brings me quickly back to the bank of the Ganga. Thank you very much. This was a spiritual experience I wanted to share with all of you. And I have now, I see we have a little time for your questions, to see your inquisitiveness, maybe.
Thank you so much. Everyone, please share your questions with Michael directly in the chat. I just have to say, so Sachin Amana Swami is my guru, and I'm familiar with this story. I'm also familiar with the story that he told last week, but I'm blown away by living it with you in the way that you just shared. It's completely different, and I feel really it's a gift you're giving all of us. I also, the meditation, you know, I'm a meditator for many years now, and to be carried by your own meditation I just saw the difference in my consciousness before and after, and it was really shocking to me, the power of what you're offering. So just speaking my gratitude.
Thank you. Well, in our little discussions when we had this one meeting before this series, you and Rasanath had asked me to make it a visceral experience where you can really be there and experience things through the eyes of the person who experiences it. And I'm trying to do this, but I really encourage you, make this spiritual experience by tuning your consciousness through a genuine spiritual practice, so that you can also receive these things. I always see that you know, what we engage our consciousness with throughout the day, that is what we attract. And I think someone who has a spiritual practice attracts these experiences, whereas maybe someone who is thinking about making fast money with gambling machines, he will be very tuned into the gambling shops, you know, or the gambling studios where there are these machines, and he will know how to handle them and so on. Really, our consciousness attracts our experiences, and therefore whatever you practice now is what you will become later. Good. So yes, let us see who of you wishes to ask the question, or let us please have this an open forum. Yes, please.
Thank you. So, Peter, would you ask your question?
Peter, you're on mute. Can you unmute yourself? Thank you.
Thank you, Sachinandan Swami. It's a real honor to be in your presence. I wish I could be there physically with you in the same way that you were physically with the monkey. My question is, well, what after he left, what was the effect on you physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually?
Wonderful question, Peter. Wonderful. And really, this is a very, very good question. See, this was a sudden experience. It was unthought of. This monkey broke down the slope of the mountain and descended upon me, so to say. And this enlightened yogi was there and giving me this experience. This jolted me out. This brought me out of my ordinary thoughts and the way I perceive the world. I could see really that what my eyes see is only a small part of reality, and how that affected my practice. Well, when I chanted afterwards, I was meditating and then chanting afterwards, I was tuned into this higher reality, and it stayed with me, this tuning in. I had the best time there at the Ganga. Everything seemed to be more transparent. You know, the mountains didn't look as firm. The trees didn't look as stable. Everything was pervaded with life. And I was attuned now into the sacredness of the Ganga. I have a friend. His name is Radhanath Maharaj, and he has expressed or talked about an experience which he had while he was once meditating at the Ganga, and I had the same after this encounter with this enlightened monkey. This Radhanath Maharaj's words, he says, from the river's song emerged thousands of celestial voices. My God, that sounds like Hermann Hesse. From the river's song emerged thousands of celestial voices, all chanting in unison the sacred syllable Om. The sound captured my mind. Closing my eyes, I merged again in the endless chant of Om. It was so beautiful. I felt on the verge of something extraordinary. I had the same feeling afterwards, that I was really sitting on the edge of my observer chair, if you so want, Peter, and I could sense the extraordinary spiritual essence in everything. Radhanath Maharaj continues, then I heard something that seemed to ascend from the depths of Mother Ganga's heart. The core of thousands of celestial voices sang a slow entrancing song that appeared to reverberate throughout the river valley. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And he ends with the entire Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, these spiritual experiences, Peter and everyone, are something like keys that open a door to an entirely new perception of the world, an entirely new realm. The world is opened now, and that was afterward. It stayed for me a long, long time. I was going up the steep path back to the small house or ashram of my friend. No, I stayed there for a long time until someone came down and informed me, it's noontime, let's eat, we are waiting for you. So yes, one spiritual experience usually pulls other spiritual experiences or brings other spiritual experiences in its wake.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. So we will officially close at this point. We're extremely grateful once again to have you, Satchinandana Swami, and we'll be back again, not next week, but in a few weeks. You have the calendar invite, so we'll have the continuation of the program coming soon. And please do invite anyone who you think would be interested. There's so much benefit to be had. We ask you, please invite people to this forum. It will go a long way for them and for all of us in building this spiritual community. Thank you all for being with us. And those of you who can continue to stay, we have more time with Satchinandana Swami for questions. Thank you.
Is there a class next week or no?
Next week, we will have a different program.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
I am seeing George and Tsifi. Hari Bol, I'm soon coming to New York. I hope to see you in person. Yes, so what do you all think when you hear these experiences?
have a question from John.
From John, okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Hari Prasad. Swamiji, what a absolute pleasure to hear you today, and thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your wisdom. And I don't have a question about today. I think I am on a 1 week delay because my question really relates to last week. And maybe I'll have a question for you today next time. But anyway, in our Upbuild course on the Gita, we're beginning to discuss the possibility of achieving growth through the experience of adversity, setback, or existential crisis. Could you speak to that? How do you view that? Do you employ certain tools to see the opportunity to grow amid crisis? And I also just wanted to finally say that when you spoke last week and discussed the experience of your family during the war and that challenge of imagine that you have nothing, that really stuck with me. And I've thought about that, and I don't know if your answer has any. I suspect that there might be a relationship between imagine that you had that you had nothing, as you look at, overcoming crisis or seeing the opportunity for growth. But thank you so much again. I'll mute myself now.
Thank you. Yeah, deeply inbuilt in the wisdom of the Bhakti tradition is this concept of growing through a crisis. The crisis being almost like a womb that gives birth to a new life. This idea is also discussed in, and let me start here, in psychology. When you lose your old house through an earthquake, there are two possibilities. One is to sit crying before the ruins of your old house, and the other is to build a completely new house which suits your new desires and new personality much better than the old house. In other words, to grow in crisis takes a certain mind switch. The switch from lamenting what is lost to switching to here's now a new field, something has become free so that I can build something up. Most people switch, unfortunately, into the lamenting mode. They remain stuck in the past, and they can't overcome the somewhat traumatic experience of loss. It takes two things to really grow in the crisis. It takes a mindset which looks forward and not backward, and then, and this I consider even more important than the mindset which looks forward, it takes an anchor that can anchor you in spiritual life. That anchor would be the understanding that I'm an eternal soul, I'm part of God, and there is no crisis that can really affect my situation because I'm already perfect. I am, in a spiritual sense, already Yeah, I have everything. I am a part of the Lord. I don't think growth can happen without this anchor. I heard of a woman in Calcutta in Bengal who had built a school for orphans from the street, you know, a real noble cause. And she had built the school from money that she had collected from generous people. But then I think she had bought an old large building for that purpose, but that burned down. So it is this, the way the story goes is the woman saw this as an opportunity and she started all over again. She went all alone and knocked at the house of possible supporters and then built a much nicer school. But you know, this ability to not become defeated, but so to say, take advantage of something which we would call resilience, is only possible for someone who has an anchor, who has something he falls back to. And I once talked with my parents. They are now late. They have both left within a short time. First my father went, and 1.5 months later my mother. When this generation of Germans lost everything, I asked them, from where did they get the personal power to move on? My mother answered with her typical angelic smile. He said, "You know, we always taught you one poem, and it is this poem which I want to recite to you in answer to your question. It is the poem which got us through all the adversaries." And this is, I hope to do full justice to my mother by translating it nicely from German into English. Let me say it first in German so that that you can hear it. Wechselnde Pfade, Schatten und Licht, alles ist Gnade, fürchte dich nicht. I think it would be like this. Changing paths, shadow and light. Everything is grace. Fear not. In German it sounds really nice because it rhymes. She rested her understanding in the understanding that there is a God. What I found in my mother's, housewives have this board where they write down the shopping list. We need cabbage, we need curly flour, we need flour, we need sugar, all this, the shopping list. And on that board, there was a little piece of paper, only this big. It was written in her handwriting. It said, zeigt dir den Weg. He shows you the way. And that was a very old piece of paper. And she told me she needed to renew it every 10 years when the other was crumbling because of the cooking vapors from the kitchen and so on. This is also asked, this question is brought up in the Mahabharata. Perhaps you have heard there were these five Pandavas very virtuous beings who were bent to stay 14 long years in the forest. They lost everything, their kingdom, their wife, their honor, in a gambling match with loaded dice. It was a scam, I think. And these five Pandavas were visited in the forest. They had lost everything by the saint Narada Muni. Narada Muni said, I see you have lost everything, but you are devotees of Krishna. Has Krishna left you? It seems so. But why have you not lost your faith? And the answer of the Pandavas is very beautiful. They said something like this: changing paths, shadow and light, everything is grace, fear not. You know, they had this understanding that behind the apparent ups and downs of this world, there is a merciful being who knows best why he acts, and what looks bad today is seen as a blessing tomorrow, you know, when you look back from tomorrow. I would recommend you something, John. Plan your day looking forward and understand your day by looking backward. Because when you look backward, you can understand that perhaps everything had its good reason. People who have gone through the traumatic experiences of a divorce, for instance, had said, when the divorce happened, oh no, it was so utterly painful, and I couldn't see any sense in it. Why did this have to happen? But then 10 years later I understood, yes, my life has moved on in ways it couldn't move on when there was the old relationship still. Yeah. good. Thank you, John, for asking this question. This question is never out of place, because we live in a world of change, and this world will bring us misery and happiness, and then misery. Changing paths, shadow and light. We have to learn to navigate both.
Thank you so much, Swamiji.
Jason, would you kindly ask your question?
Well, first of all, thank you, Satchinanda Swami. The story that you told was so touching and impactful in many ways. It was heartfelt and emotional and spiritual, and so I just was tickled by it. My question is about the Om practice, and for someone like me who's new to using a mantra or a chant, I was just hoping to get some guidance. It was very powerful for me that I felt a lot of different emotions in the heart center, like an armoring and a pain, as well as a joy and an opening at the same time. And so I'd like to do more of it daily, and would just like any guidance or advice that you have on that.
Yes. The first thing is, if you want to have this a complete experience of Om, it is good if you know how to pronounce it properly. Phonetically, that means the sounds which should be in there, are A, U, and M. A pronounced as A, U pronounced as U, and then M. And the M has should take most of the time. Let me just do it one time for you. Please just watch me. That's very important so that you see how I pronounce it. I will first make a sound a little bit like ah, and then I will, the sound will, I hope the English word is correct, it will morph or develop or transmute or go over into an U and then an M. You might even like to take your mobile telephone, but oh no, this can be, you can watch it later. So watch me, I'm sitting there. I'm doing a few deep breaths. And for those who start with Om, it's good if they, and they want the effect, it can be a little bit on this tonality of C. That is very good for the human emotions, for the, in relationship to Om. I've put this on now, it's a ragini. Can you hear the sound? Good, in the back. And then I go. And again. Exaggerated it a little bit to make the, it a little clear. Now I want to do it like you most probably would like to do it. It is a voluminous sound. You wish to make a rich sound, not a sharp It is because you want to pervade all levels of your awareness with it. It is said in the tradition that in the Om all states of our consciousness are addressed. The wakeful consciousness, the sleeping consciousness where there are dreams, the dreamless state, and then a fourth state, which is a spiritual state that is independent of sensual perception. It is beyond. No? So you do this. You intone it, and then you sit a little in silence to let the sound reverberate. I did it regularly. I have mantras which I chant, which start with Om, or I chant Om alone, and it will open something in you, and then whenever you chant it, you will see how it pervades, the Om pervades your whole being. There's an old Sanskrit verse about it. I would like to share this with you, Jason. Om is all that is, all that was, all that shall be and that is beyond. All is Om in eternity. Beautiful. And if you can, while you chant Om, do this little exercise where you just, when the mind starts to move, as it will, then just go back and just focus on the sound vibration, and you will see that the mental images, the thoughts, the moods and so on will disappear, almost like fog that is touched by the early rays of the sun. It just goes. So by focusing on the sound vibration of the Om, that inner fog will clear and disappear. When the new book comes out, where all this is discussed in detail, please approach Hari Prasad, and he will give you a copy, and then you can do it perfectly. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My dad has a question.
Wow, George, wonderful.
Oh, it's wonderful to be in your presence, Maharaj. And I was just thinking that if there's another trip that I make into the jungle, I definitely will not go unless you are the leader. I had, you know, by the way, I also want to thank you for the recommendation of the book, The Dark Night of the Soul by Gerald May. It is amazing. I can't tell you how much it's affecting me. But anyway, I had to contrast to myself how humans living in the material world undergo these various phases of development from birth to death, early childhood, schooling, work, professions, careers, marriage, children, retirement, illness, death, and so on. And this birth to death cycle presents millions and millions of choices and decisions, thoughts that may surely result in stress, tragedy, depression, happiness, and joy at various times. I couldn't help but consider what are some of the choices that you experienced and the decisions you made during your lifelong journey as a monk, to contrast your choices as a monk to your observation of human existence in the material world. Is there any wisdom you can relate from your monkhood experiences that those striving for higher spiritual attainment can use as guidelines to a life of greater fulfillment?
Yeah. George, I apply a threefold process which brings me out of the apparent situation, which sometimes is stressful, and brings me to a more spiritual assessment. I first step back, and first I stop myself from an impulsive reaction. Then I step back a little bit. When I am step back, I connect myself with spiritual truth, and then I choose a wise response to the situation. I would like to give you an example where I needed to do this step, because it was really perhaps very emotionally filled situation. It was when I visited my dying mother on the deathbed, just in the end of December this year. We had talked, and then my mother requested me to help her to accompany her up to the bathroom, and then she would use the bathroom and so on. My mother was a lady. She did not wish anyone to be there in the bathroom when she did her bathroom activities. So I had to help her out of the bed. I had to carry her and bring her on one of these, we call them in rollators, you know, you push chair. Is it called push chair?
Wheelchair?
wheelchair.
Sima frame.
What?
Sima frame.
Sima frame. Sima frame.
It's like a, the one they use for Sima frame.
A Zemo frame.
Yeah.
My Gaur Krishna tells me a Zemo frame. Does this ring familiar? No? It's something you take and you... It has four wheels and then it helps you. One moment, I take the word because it's necessary. No, that is not right. It was on wheels. It's not a Zemo frame.
Somebody mentioned rolling walker.
Yes, rolling walkers. Thank you very much. Okay. We looked for that rolling walker. So it is. So then I waited before the bathroom, but my mother didn't come out. After 10 minutes, there was no sound. My niece was also there, the wife of my older brother, and I said, you know our mother and your mother-in-law, she doesn't want men to be in the bathroom when she is in the bathroom activity, so I respect that because she's very German-like. Ooh, you get the sauce when you do the wrong thing. So I sent my niece in, and she said, come quick, she has fainted. She had done her activities, then she had fainted. So, okay, we brought her on the chair, on that rolling walker. There is a function where you can sit down the patient, and then it's almost like, then it's like a wheelchair. It's a multifunctional thing. So we brought her out, but somehow in the process, the mother came out of her fainting spell and her whole body became stiff and we couldn't move her through the doors any longer. It was very difficult. And here I thought, I'm not a person who, I have not learned how to do this, you know, how to deal with it. And I started to, my God, I don't want to touch her in a way that she falls and then she maybe dies from from breaking something or hitting with her head. And I was really in a panic because it was my mother. She was breathing, and you know, she was in those days where any day she could pass. So I was a little bit challenged, really, because it's my dear mother, and she is a very wise person, and I just couldn't deal with the situation. So we quickly phoned someone from an institution which can take care of people in the last stage. There was someone quickly came because we explained the emergency, and they helped the mother to somehow get into their bed, her bed. So as this was all going on, very dramatic, you know, the breathing was extremely, it made us very nervous, my niece and myself, and we felt maybe she dies now and this would not be the graceful death she wanted, and so on. So I used then this method. I stepped back from the situation. I understood, yes, we are all eternal souls. We have to go through birth, old age, disease, and death. And I'm now here. I'm the son who has to take care that everything happens gracefully and in good consciousness. And what is the best situation here? And immediately, from somewhere the idea came, let me phone these people from the old age home, which is just only 50 meters away from the place where the house of the parents is, and let me do everything. And I was so cool and so composed. I could also help bring my mother to the bed when she woke up. I could pacify her and said, I'm with you, and she became peaceful again. Just by this process, stop your reaction, step back, and look at the same thing from the spiritual perspective. That has always helped me. It has helped me on the chair of the dentist. It has helped me before surgery. It had helped me when I looked, the many times I looked death into the eyes. It helped me to exit, so to say, the panic-stricken mind and to enter the observing spiritual mind and come to a good conclusion. Maybe there will be a time, George, when you are 120 years old, where you will have to face that final examination, and you're lying on your bed and the breathing will become shallow and your mind will become anxious. Oh, how will everything go? Where will I go now? It is so uncertain. Who can say for sure what will be my further journey? And you can just at that time and do this. Pause for a moment and go into the observer role. See it maybe like this little instrument would see the situation. Your camera in your mobile telephone, without judgment, without attributing emotions, just recording, and not just that, bringing in your spiritual knowledge from the Gita, and looking from that perspective and then making a wise decision how to pass on. This is the three-step de-stressing method, or much more than de-stressing. It brings you immediately on a spiritual platform. Only when you are totally involved and chained to the event will you be stuck. You have to unchain, unwind, disconnect from your impulsive reaction and come to the more enlightened reaction. And three steps will help you.
For wisdom.
I thank you. My dear everyone, I'm looking here at the time. It is passing on without our desire. It is a great honor and happiness to be with you. Thank you so much. And I think we will give the word to Hari Prasad, who will tell us goodbye and also will tell us when we meet again.
Thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami. We're so, so grateful for you. Thank you for sharing yourself with us. And thank you to everyone for being here. We will return again.